Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us today on State of Our Workforce. Each month, we take a journey together into the heart of workforce innovation and explore how to build an equitable workforce. My name is Michelle Wilson. I am the Director of Evaluation Learning at the National Fund, and I am super excited to continue our conversation about the anthropology of work. And our Anthropology of Work series focuses on various cultural, social, and historical contexts that impact and shape how we build an equitable workforce. This month, as we recognize Women's History Month, we turn our focus to a pivotal piece of legislation that's at the heart of ongoing negotiations in Congress, and that is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, or as we know it in the workforce world, WIOA. The reauthorization of WIOA offers a unique lens through which to examine the current and future state of workforce development, particularly its impact on race and gender inequities across industries. In an era marked by rapid technological advancement and shifting economic tides, understanding how policy shapes opportunities and barriers is crucial. And to that end, I am thrilled to be joined by Katie Spiker. Woo! She's the Managing Director of Government Affairs at the National Skills Coalition, our sister organization. We share an office together when we're in DC, to unpack the nuances of the WIOA authorization and what it can mean for us. Hi, Katie. That was a big intro. Hi, Katie. How are you?
Hi, Michelle. That was a great intro.
It's good to see you.
Great to see you, too.
You ready to get started?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Okay, so when we were thinking about like, well, who do we want to talk to for Women's History Month? Josh, our producers, like you know, Katie, her background, like she has deep roots in workforce and women, and we're like, oh yeah, let's bring her on, and she's super smart and knows what you know. She focuses on WIOA, so we thought we would have you on. Thank you for joining us. So just a little bit, Katie, about your prior life in workforce and focusing on women as a way to, you know, ground you in the work that you're doing today. Tell us a little about that.
I love the way that you phrase that about grounding in the work today, because that's exactly how it feels. So thank you for having me. I am flattered that you all thought of me and of National Skills Coalition, and I'm excited for the conversation. I have been working I started my career working in gender equity work with a fellowship that I did after law school that was focused on women and public policy. Mm-hmm. And I started initially working on job quality and gender equity work, and mm-hmm. then transitioned to do more occupational segregation and a little bit more in the job training world. And what I realized while working for an organization then called Wider Opportunities for Women was that almost all of workforce was gender equity, because the policies that we were working on to advance people's ability to train for jobs and to get and achieve good pathways to good jobs, as well as meeting business needs, was about ensuring that everyone had an opportunity to do that. And without focusing on women and people of color, we were never going to actually be able to address either things like systemic racism and gender inequity and occupational segregation, or things like the overall shortage of opportunity that people have in order to get good skills.
So usually it's a little later in our program where I say things like, preach, sister, but you just said it. So I'm going to be like, yes, preach. That is it. That's exactly what I want to talk about. Before we dig into this a little bit, so I said that we are office mates in some respect because we share office, but the National Skills and the National Fund, we have a pretty a unique relationship. Tell us why you think that's important and how we are situated at.
I think it's absolutely important. So National Skills Coalition focuses on policies, and we work both at the state level and the federal level. And all of the work that we do is grounded in the experience and work with our networks. So specifically with National Skills Coalition, we have a state policy advocacy network, our SkillSpan partners that work at the state level around organizing and supporting policy. And we work with Business Leaders United for Workforce Partnerships, some of our businesses, Voices for Skills, where we're working with workers themselves. And then we have the broader network of National Skills Coalition that's comprised of many of the overlap between the folks that work with you all at National Fund and with us at National Skills Coalition. And that that big umbrella of the network is really reflected in and grounded in the work that you all have been doing at National Fund to support the partnerships at the local level that your sites are running that bring together practitioners, workforce boards, community organizations, colleges, local philanthropy. And it's those kind of partnerships that are at the root, at the heart of all of the policy recommendations that we're making. So it's really helpful to have both the overall network alignment in what we're doing, but then also the expertise of you all and the folks at National Fund when we're having conversations about how some of the policy impacts could actually look on the ground.
And I love it when we get to, not that this is an NSC and National Fund like Love Fest, but I love it when we are in town and we're able to collaborate and talk about things and share ideas about how we move our work forward. But so we could talk about that all day, but we're not. I want to turn to WIOA. And so I'm going to ask you to just give us a brief overview of what WIOA is and why it matters, like the primary objectives of WIOA.
WIOA is the primary law that establishes the structures, the programs, and the funding levels for our national workforce system. And it's really the main vehicle from the federal level to support workforce development and workforce training across the country. It's one thing that's particularly interesting in some of the evolution or that was really intended at the heart of the most recent reauthorization in 2014 was returning to and focusing on the dual customers of the public workforce system. So it merges. And when we talk about it, I'll certainly talk about both its responsibilities and opportunities for workers and making sure that workers have access to quality jobs, as well as meeting the demand of businesses and ensuring particularly small and mid-sized companies that don't have that infrastructure on their own to support workforce training have the capacity to rely on the public workforce system and engage with the public workforce system.
And that dual customer piece, I mean, that's really so important and critical to how we think about our work too, because obviously we have an Activate Employers portfolio of work that we do at the National Fund. We also have an Equip Workers for Success, right? They go hand in hand. And so that is also a unique perspective that we collectively draw from in our work in the workforce field. So that's fantastic. So what do you want to talk about? So where should we dig into this conversation around WIOA and reauthorization? Where do you want to dig into the conversation and like in that time that we have and say, here's what we should be talking about?
Yeah. So we could start with some of what's happening in WIOA and why you and I are here to why it's on the top of mind for us, which is that we're in a reauthorization process. And then I'd also love, after we talk about some of the policy, to share a little bit about some new research that we've done on why it's so important that the bill is up for reauthorization.
Yes, again. So yes, we're currently negotiating this. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. And gosh, I probably would have said, you know, something slightly different 2 weeks ago if we'd been having this conversation when I say that they're in active negotiations around WIOA. So let's start with the fact that WIOA has been up for reauthorization. It's been continued to be funded at relatively level funding over the past couple of years, despite the increases that we've heard from businesses, workers, and the workforce system about the need for more investment. And that need for more investment is really at the heart of what National Skills Coalition, working with you all and others, have been pushing for as part of the reauthorization. So WIOA has historically been underfunded, and the vision that we've been working with our network to try and understand in this reauthorization process would be one in which a public workforce system could deliver high quality skills training that supports the assets and aspirations of working people while helping small businesses, particularly that are hiring locally and investing in their workers, continue to be able to do so, and one that advances racial equity and pathways to quality jobs. Mm-hmm. Those all sound like great aspirations to have. And there's a little bit of movement in Congress to try and move in that direction. So there was a House bipartisan bill that was introduced at the end of last year that would have some components to better help engage businesses. There was a new program under the of the House bill that would target particularly workers that have been dislocated and trying to help them re-enter the workforce. The biggest challenge that we saw from that House bill, and now as the Senate turns to the work on it, is that there wasn't an increase in authors. Obviously, the fund conversations themselves come as part of the budget, the appropriations piece, but it's a signal and a challenge when even the authorizing piece of legislation does not have the allowance. On the Senate side,
Yeah, it was a little bit choppy. I was like, is that me?
On the Senate side, they're now
I love it when we have technical difficulties. This is really
should I talk about digital skills now? That's just to like bring technology into it as much as possible, or whether AI can just take over my talking points for me now. Is that a little better? I shut.
That's better. That's better.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. So I was talking a little bit about how we saw some modernization on the House side,
right,
but without the adequate investments. Now the Senate has started taking up bipartisan efforts. I mean, a lot of, and where there's conversations happening with the HELP committee between staff and between Chairman Sanders and Ranking Member Cassidy, who are really leading those conversations. Some of the places, there are some places of overlap between Republicans and Democrats in the House. And I think that there is an opportunity for the conversation to advance. There's two big things that are standing in the way, though. One is just time. Mm-hmm. The calendar for the rest of the year, particularly given this is an election year, just gets tricky to get anything and get members of Congress to have the bandwidth and the floor time to be able to advance a piece of policy. So we're really pushing up against whether there's even enough time in the year. And we're really looking towards, you know, whether there'll be movement before or after Memorial Day. If we don't see a bill, if we don't see text that we can comment on and offer feedback on by Memorial Day, then we're really looking at it being almost impossible for something to happen this Congress. And then the other big piece is that there are partisan differences in what modernizing workforce and a workforce package needs to include. So there's a lot of conversation happening from new proposed regs around apprenticeship with the Department of Labor, an executive order from the White House around apprenticeship with the federal government. And then there's a big push from Democrats to include reauthorizing the National Apprenticeship Act as part of a workforce package. At the same time, Republicans in the Senate are particularly keen on including a provision to expand Pell Grants to high-quality short-term training programs as part of it. And that all being wrapped up in one conversation or one bill that would center on workforce and include WIOA. Means that there are as many different opinions on what should be part of that package as there are members.
Yes. So I mean, I don't want to say if you were hedging bets, how do you think this will shake out? I mean, are you hopeful that we'll get something before Memorial Day? I mean, does it feel realistic?
I think that we may see proposals. I think they may be partisan. I think we may see something from the Republicans that center on some of the themes that we saw from the House bill, like skills-based hiring or incumbent worker training or supporting innovation and maybe some of the data pieces. And then I think that we may see bigger recommendations and push from the Democrats, again, particularly around apprenticeship. So if I'm in my... No one's going to hold me accountable. I think that right now is the key point for conversations and advocacy, because even if we don't see a final bill this year, I think that the conversations, the legislative texts that we've seen come out of the House and are likely to see come out of the Senate are going to be the foundation for where we start again with the new Congress next year. And it's always more effective to be in the conversations during the shaping and writing stage so that our advocacy can be for keeping provisions that we want to see in those bills and not eliminating them. For example, in the House bill, we did not see a big push for or response to or support for industry or sector partnerships at the level that both of our organizations have been focusing on. Right. And so a lot of the effort that we're doing in the Senate now is to try and rectify that and make sure that when there are Senate proposals, that those include the recognition that industry or sector partnerships are really the foundation of how stakeholders at the local level convene, pool resources, and engage to move work forward together within an industry.
Lots of stuff going on. I mean, and you guys are really busy. You're super busy during this time, but fingers crossed. And we'll talk a little bit later about how we get in on this or what it means for us collectively to what the call of action is. But I want to pivot now a little bit, because you talked about a piece of work that you all commissioned as it relates to this. And so let's dig into that a little bit, because I'm excited to hear more about that.
Over the past couple of years, there were three main investments from the federal level that folks, I'm sure, are aware of, right? There's the CHIPS, there's Inflation Reduction Act, and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. Looking at all of those massive investments, we worked with Blue-Green Alliance and commissioned University of Massachusetts Amherst to do some research into both where are the jobs and occupations that are going to be the most impacted by those investments, and do we have enough workers that are prepared to fill those jobs? And unsurprisingly, because both we're talking about it and we're talking about skills, right? And because of people's general awareness of the world, the answer is we don't have workers that are prepared to step in to do those jobs. Right. So the research indicated that there's going to be 2.9 million jobs each year, or job years each year, for folks to step. These are going to be jobs in construction, manufacturing. Of those 2.9 million jobs, there's really occupations, shortages, significant labor occupations that kind of span across the different investments. So electricians, for example, we're going to need electricians in order to create and modernize clean energy under the Inflation Reduction Act. Locations and buildings, and we're going to need them in. When you look at these many occupations that are labor market shortages, two things really stand out. The first is that these are jobs that have largely been available and accessible to white men. And so all of those 20
occupations been accessible to white men,
10 of them have less than 10%. A huge issue. Women in these industries, and 15 of those 20 occupations have lower representation and are comprised of less than 39% of people of color, which is the overall representation in the workforce as a whole. So these are jobs that both need to be that people need access to skills in order to fill, because the majority of these jobs need some education after high school, but not a four-year degree, and these are jobs from which women and people of color have historically and currently been excluded.
I'm going to pause here for a second because we cut out, but I want to make sure, because that's important information, that we capture this in case it's cutting out in video land. You're talking about 20 occupations that will be impacted by this that are mostly held by white men. And I think what I heard you say is that 10% of those jobs are held by women, and 15 of those occupations, they're accessible, but not accessible. Is it 15 of those occupations? Can you repeat that? Are people of color don't have access?
In 10 of those 20 occupations, women make up less than 10% of the workforce. And in 15 of those occupations, people of color are underrepresented as compared to their overall representation in the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, and this is really important because, again, as we think about how we, occupational segregation is such a huge topic, right? And everybody wants to know, people that we talk to, so where do you dig in? What does that mean to actually disrupt these drivers of occupational segregation? So that's really informative for how we think about what it means to do the work on the ground as we work across our network in these spaces. And then hearing that is just right. So when is the report out? When do we get to see it? What's the release date?
Yep. So that it's out right now. I can, it's on National Skills Coalition's website, nationalskillscoalition.org. I was about to say I'll drop it in, but I'm not sure I can do two things at once between both talking and finding a link. So if folks can find that on National Skills Coalition's website, and can also sign up for our email lists where we circulate resources, and I'll be using some more materials around that, particularly around our conversation with creating and supporting people-powered infrastructure.
I think Josh, our producer, can put it in, and if not, we will definitely make it accessible when we close out this session here. So looking ahead, there are some other things happening at NSC events. Do you want to tell us about that when we think about the call to action and where we take this work and how we get in on it? Share us with that. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, our annual Skills Summit is coming up May 13th through the 15th here in Washington, D.C. That's an event that brings together folks from both of our networks, our shared workforce community, where folks can hear and learn from each other, as well as be provided some of the supports and training and materials to then go up and talk to your policymakers. So the third day of that conference is focused around bringing delegations of folks from different states up to talk to their policymakers and do Hill visits and meet with folks from the agency to really tell their stories and put a story to the public workforce system, which is one of the biggest things that I think the system really needs, because there's not just one program that's funded under WIOA. It looks different in every state, the types of programs that are funded, the participants in a program. And so a member of Congress, when they think of the public workforce system, doesn't have just one snapshot in their head of what that looks like. And the more stories that we can tell members and the more exposure that they can have and that staff can have to the kind of success stories, as well as some of the challenges that folks are facing, then that makes it more likely that we're able to see some of the important changes that we want to see in WIOA reauthorization, as well as some of the funding through the appropriations process. In fact, just this, oh, go ahead.
Finish your thought.
This year, the president just a couple of weeks ago released his budget request for the year. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was included in it was a proposal for what's called a career training fund, which would be mandatory funding, $8 billion that would go to support training, support services, connections to and industry partnerships. That proposal is something that's been part of the collective workforce community conversation, that was part of National Skills Coalition's WIOA recommendations, and that's new in the president's budget this year and is really reflective of the advocacy the community has been doing in telling members of Congress that we need more investments and that we need investments that actually address worker need and business demand.
I was just going to say, I love the annual Skills Summit. I have not been able to attend, but we do send National Fund folks there every year, and people are always jazzed and excited, and lots of folks from our network. But it really is a very tangible way to get involved and have your voice heard on the Hill. And so it's just, it's exciting. And so tell people how they can get in on this. What do they need to do? What does it look like?
Mm-hmm. Folks can register on nationalskillscoalition.org. There, you can also on the website navigate to our events and find videos from last year. Last year we had Randy Weingarten, president of AFT, who spoke. We also had videos and comments from members of Congress and secretaries from the administration. And so folks can look at what some of that content looked mm-hmm. like. And then can register then to be part of the conversation for those 3 days in May.
Okay. Well, I think we are coming up on time, but as we close out, I want to thank you, Katie, for joining us. Any final thoughts that you want to put out there to us before we close out?
Thank you for having me. And I'm glad that you're moving forward these conversations, because without focusing on women, both during Women's History Month and otherwise, then we're not going to see the kind of targeted policies that are actually going to address and disrupt occupational segregation. So this was an exciting conversation. I'm glad you all are moving
forward. Fantastic way to end. I want to thank everyone who joined the audience on LinkedIn as well. Please make sure to follow the National Fund on LinkedIn to stay up to date with all the latest from State of Our Workforce. Also, I want you to tune in next month as we continue the conversation on the anthropology of work. I will be on a 5-week sabbatical. Shout out and thank you to the National Fund for the gift of a sabbatical. But we've got a great show lined up. Carrie Felton will be here, my colleague, and sitting in for me. And the conversation will focus on language justice and why it matters in our efforts to create a more equitable workforce. So we've got something really nice lined up for you next month. And I will see you back here in May.
State of Our Workforce is a production of the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. This episode was produced by Josh Enoch. The music in this episode is produced by Alex Productions. You can find past episodes of State of Our Workforce on our website at nationalfund.org. State of Our Workforce is also available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you may listen. State of Our Workforce airs live monthly on LinkedIn. Follow the National Fund for Workforce Solutions on LinkedIn to get updates about the next live recording of State of Our Workforce.